It's been a long, hard winter. More snow, more cold, more storms and power outages, more school closures, and probably more difficult days than many of us can recall in recent years. Even here in our beloved Baltimore, the consequences of winter storms continue to be with us. Snapped trees, lingering coughs, extra school days, and a persistent fear that the weather will turn at any moment, as you remember it did in February and March. And I won't speak for all of us, although I probably can, when I say that getting stuff done has been hard. And maybe that's why I find myself walking around with a stupid grin on my face all week long every time I feel the glorious sun. It's turning, like the circuit that snaps into a connection, for real this time, as we finally had enough sunny spring days to push up the shoots and open the buds. Just in time for Passover to remind us of our going out from Egypt, and for Easter to remind us of the rising rebirth of our souls. These spring festivals call the attention of our hearts to movement and to change. Everything has seasons. As Ecclesiastes and the birds remind us, there is a time for everything and a season for every activity under heaven. Sometimes the regeneration that bursts forth with the dawning of the new season starts in an unexpected place, like bylaws. Article 2, Section C 2.1 of the bylaws of the Unitarian Universalist Association states, "We, the member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association, covenant to affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, and respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part." They're not numbered, for the record, but those are our seven principles. And though you will rarely hear them referred to as Article 2 of the UUA bylaws, that's the where and the why of them. No text is more widely used to describe Unitarian Universalism than our seven principles. But they weren't our first principles. When the Universalist Church of America and the American Unitarian Association began formal discussions of consolidating in the mid-20th century, they needed to create a vehicle to outline the core values common to members of both faiths. This wasn't easy. Only through 1,000-member assemblies, contentious votes, all-night wordsmithing, compromise, and eventual exhausted approval were six statements used to sew together our two religions. In 1961, the Unitarian Universalist Association was born. The principles that united the Universalists and the Unitarians, though quite similar in concept to the seven principles we know, carry the baggage of their time, unexamined sexist language. The world's first UUs were dedicated to the dignity of man, honoring the Judeo-Christian heritage which affirms love to God and love to man, and ideals of brotherhood, justice, and peace. They wished for cooperation with men of goodwill in every land. And these principles served to knit us together for a time. In the mid-1970s, The fires that had emboldened UU communities were fading. The success of the fellowship movement, the glow of civil rights victories, and the incredible democratic triumph of the consolidation itself had all begun to fade from being current events to being history. And so in the late 1960s and early 70s, racist missteps and tension, unexamined privilege and continued sexism kept Unitarian Universalist leadership white and male, and congregations increasingly irrelevant. Within the progressive and tumultuous shift happening in the wider U.S. culture, within a context of economic depression, Unitarian Universalist membership fell precipitously in the 1970s. The people UU congregations had always counted on to show up began to drop out. In 1977, women made up less than 5% of UU clergy. That was the year the UU Women's Federation passed a resolution to ask UUA leaders to, quote, make every effort to A, put traditional assumptions and language in perspective, and B, avoid sexist assumptions and language in the future, end quote. Over the next 8 years, tremendous work was done to research, brainstorm, craft, convince, problem solve, and eventually affirm the set of seven principles and six sources that we've enjoyed since 1985. These principles and sources eliminated sexist language, and they better organized and acknowledged our own religious heritage. They made for better, more relevant bylaws. But far more importantly, the process that was used to create them enabled these new principles to take root in our movement and to grow within us to guide us. This was no simple committee process. Congregations and individual Unitarian Universalists were asked directly for their ideas and suggestions. From this, a small 7-person committee grappled with the wording so carefully and so thoughtfully that the final draft was approved at General Assembly by an overwhelming margin. Unitarian Universalists saw ourselves in these 7 principles. And in the 1980s, Unitarian Universalism began to grow. It's true that our association grew in numbers, possibly more because of shifting demographics in our larger culture. But beyond that, our beloved Unitarian Universalism began to unfold. The openness of reaching out to individual congregations and UUs to collaborate, the attention paid to previously unexamined language, and the commitment to welcome and acceptance of all sexual orientations, each contributed to opening Unitarian Universalism to wider participation. Now, today, not only do women make up more than half of UU clergy, but gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender clergy serve openly in congregations throughout our association and enrich our movement every day. The advent of our 7 principles engendered a rebirth of Unitarian Universalism. A new season was ushered in. These new principles affirmed what was important to us and where we stood in the wider culture. They changed the way congregations and even individual UUs thought of ourselves. And this, I believe, has caused a problem. You see, instead of a bylaws statement of our commonly held values, which is what they were intended to be, we have begun to use the 7 principles not only to define us, but to drive us. When I was in seminary, rich in imagined enlightenment and poor in the resources that allow one to buy food, I took a consulting gig, just a one-day thing, with a small local congregation to help them do mission and vision work. It was your typical run-of-the-mill UU Saturday workshop. It was 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., lasagna and salad for lunch. Volunteers brought bagels and juice and made plenty of hot coffee. Maybe you yourself have been to a meeting much like this. They were board members and committee chairs, about half a dozen church leaders. They had given up their Saturday to do this work on behalf of a congregation that they had already given their lives to. For me, I had packed my car with newsprint and painter's tape and post-its. I had sticky-back name tags and dots for dot voting. I was totally prepared. But as I was new to consulting, I did forget a few things, like bothering to learn how to lead a mission and vision workshop. I didn't talk to folks at the congregation ahead of time to learn why they were doing this work. I didn't study effective techniques in facilitating difficult discussions or creating meaningful mission statements corporately. I didn't know anything, really. And so, at the end of that long day, what they ended up with was not a vision statement. It was not a mission statement. It was a very pretty way of describing who they already were, and it was peppered with some vague, idealistic, unstructured phrases. It did not serve them. It did not inspire them. It did not lead them to action or help them understand where they wanted to go or what they were willing to sacrifice or do to get there. And I think I will probably feel guilty about that day for the rest of my life. And that is because vision and mission are important. And without them, we are without power. For all the valuable and necessary cultural shifting the new seven principles accomplished, we lost a great deal of the verbs that infused those first principles. We lost strengthen one another and cherish and spread universal truths. We kept affirm and promote, but we lost defend. We lost implement our vision and serve. We lost organize new churches and fellowships and extend and strengthen liberal religion. We lost encourage cooperation. I'm not saying that it wasn't worth it. But what I am saying this morning is that we need to get our verbs back. The seven principles outline important, heartfelt values that most of us share. And importantly, not just most of us in this room or most of us in UU congregations, but a whole lot of people who have never heard of Unitarian Universalism, who believe wholeheartedly in the seven principles we share. Personally, I think they're an excellent part of our bylaws. I'm happy to keep them. I don't think that they're wrong. But what I do think is wrong, is a mistake, is how we have allowed the seven principles to stand in place of a vision and a mission of Unitarian Universalism. The language we use when we describe ourselves articulates our values, but fails to imagine us as a relevant force in the world. We leave the most important part up to interpretation. We have allowed something that we can basically all agree on to stand in the way of an articulated vision and a mission that requires struggle and transformation. A much passed along holiday tale tells of a young woman who hauls a large roast out of her refrigerator, and she chops off one end before placing it in the pan to put in the oven. Her friend, who's sitting there, says, "Why did you do that?" And she replies, "Well, that's how my mom taught me how to make a roast. Isn't that how you do it?" and her friend says no. So she calls her mother and asks her, "Mom, why do you cut off the end of the roast before you put it in the oven?" And her mom responds immediately, "Oh, right. Remember that roast pan that we had when we lived in the apartment? It was so small, the whole roast never fit inside, so I always had to chop some of the roast off." We made a change to Unitarian Universalism in 1985, a cultural change that reinvigorated an increasingly irrelevant institution. It's time for another. In a very real way, we won that round. The roast pan that was our cultural context in the late 20th century was small. 20 years ago, a queer atheist kid or a kid with two moms who found a UU youth group found an island of safety unavailable in any other realm of their life. Now, that's still true for some kids today, but for many of our kids, not all, but for many of our kids, the culture has shifted, and the UU church doesn't need to be that island of safety anymore. Cultural changes, social media, the internet in general, have meant that so many of us who used to be alone aren't alone anymore. It's a beautiful thing. And it's not just true of youth. Many of us have a wide range of opportunities outside church to get what only church used to give us. The landscape of our lives, like the woman's roast pan, has changed, and the compartmentalization that used to be required of us rarely is today. It's time to stop finding our identity in the edges of our own definition and start finding it in our vision, where we are going together, and our mission, what we are doing to get there. We can do a lot of good work within a small Unitarian Universalism. If a person is relatively comfortable here because we don't say God too much and we think social justice is important, and we don't make the kids memorize Bible verses, that's cool. That's fine. But that's not the Unitarian Universalism that I want to be. That's a small Unitarian Universalism that has carved itself to fit into a small pan. That is not the whole Unitarian Universalism that feeds all the people who need it. If, on the other hand, you are a Unitarian Universalist because your atheism is challenged and fed and supported and understood in UU community, I want this to be your place. If you believe social justice is a moral imperative and you long to work alongside others with diverse theologies in order to transform the world, I want this to be your place. If your soul needs to connect to itself and others in opportunities to serve and to grow, and if you long for your children to be in a place where their religious development is nurtured and kindled instead of tested, Unitarian Universalism is the place for you. If the God of your heart has no way to work in the world except through your hands, you are a person who has a vision and a mission, and you deserve a faith with a vision and a mission, too. Our own congregation has a poetic mission statement. The First Unitarian Church of Baltimore is the spiritual home of a diverse and mutually supportive community of people who strive to build on our deep historical roots as a congregation to be a beacon of hope, social justice, and liberal religious values in Baltimore and the world. I know some of you in this room were likely involved in creating that statement. It's beautiful. But it's not a mission statement. This is a descriptive statement. It doesn't lead us anywhere. In fact, If anything, it encourages us to stand still. Think about the last organization you gave money to. The Red Cross, maybe. Their mission is as follows. The American Red Cross prevents and alleviates human suffering in the face of emergencies by mobilizing the power of volunteers and the generosity of donors. Prevents and alleviates human suffering. I want our church to do that. Maybe you last wrote a check to National Public Radio. The mission of NPR is to work in partnership with member stations to create a more informed public, one challenged and invigorated by a deeper understanding and appreciation of events, ideas, and cultures. Create a more informed public. Challenge and invigorate to a deeper understanding. I want our church to do that. How about one of our partner organizations, Dayspring, whose mission is, quote, to improve the quality of life for children and families, focusing on those affected by substance abuse, homelessness, and poverty. Improve the quality of life. I want our church to do that. While we are busy being a beacon, the other organizations we write our checks to, that we support with our hearts and our money, and sometimes our time, they are preventing and alleviating human suffering. They're creating a more informed public, challenged and invigorated to a deeper understanding, and improving the quality of life. I believe it's vital to respect the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. I also want to transform the world. I want to transform you, and I want you to transform me. I want our connections to change this world because we love it and all the people in it. That's why I'm here. I kind of love the seven principles. I believe in them. I agree with them. I think they're beautiful, and I think they provide meaning and guidance for many of us. I'm very grateful to the people who crafted them and fought for their changes. We needed them. I kind of love the seven principles. But I love Unitarian Universalism more. And I long for the day when we can cast a vision that challenges and a mission that transforms. If we are to be a faith worthy of our youth, worthy of ourselves, and the folks who have yet to walk through those doors, I believe we must find a way through our agreements to the heart of the matter. We must find the verbs, the movement, that will enable us to carry ourselves forward, as small as a connection and as large as everything that is holy. Unitarian Universalism is due for the heat and the fire and the change of a sunrise. I believe that starts with us, with the congregations, the online groups, the gathered faithful. We are Unitarian Universalism, after all, the where and the why. What is our congregation's bold vision? What is the form our courage might take in a mission that moves unwaveringly toward that bold vision? There is a time for everything. I believe now is the time for a regeneration. May it be so.